Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And Jim, we've talked a lot in the last few days about the fight to repeal the president's health care plan. We saw the courts take a number of steps in the last few months. Just last week, the judge in Florida declaring the whole thing thrown out, saying the individual mandate's unconstitutional. The House Republicans successfully repealed it. Senate Republicans succeeded in bringing it to a vote. They didn't win that vote. But now, at least four Senate Democrats, conveniently, all of them up in 2012 and in red states, want to perhaps team up with Senate Republicans to at least go after the individual mandate. We're talking about Tester. We're talking about Ben Nelson. We're talking about Claire McCaskill and Joe Manchin. So this is obviously convenient. You have some Republicans who are wary about trying to work with these people because they realize they're just doing it to help their reelection chances, and the president's going to veto anything anyway. Others say this just shows that even these people see that the American people hate this thing.
Yeah, I mean, the four who have been mentioned are not surprising. In fact, the lack of Jim Webb on the list might be the most, you know, the dog that didn't bark, so to speak, might be the more surprising angle on this. Probably what's worth noting is you can interpret this as here are four Senate Democrats basically saying Obamacare in its current form and existence will cost me reelection. So these are probably four who are secretly hoping that the Supreme Court strikes it down as unconstitutional and kind of nullifies it heading into 2012. That way they can say that they'd like a modified version, a constitutional version, and be, you know, vague and evasive and try to save their seats. Obviously, the Obama administration doesn't want to see that happen. I think having seen all of these Senate Democrats vote against repeal very recently, it's got to be a little unnerving to the Obama administration to hear this kind of leak and to hear four of them all saying, you know, this has got to be changed. I want to see this some modifications going on, because there are 47 Republicans who all voted to repeal. 47 plus 4 adds up to 51, Greg. Joe Biden can stay home. Not even going to need him to break any 50-50 ties. So, you know, obviously a somewhat encouraging circumstance. And I was a little surprised to see not one Democrat waver on the repeal vote. So now we're starting to see the real side of what Democrats think of Obamacare and its likely electoral impact.
Absolutely right. And I wouldn't be surprised if Mitch McConnell tried to bring it up and attach it to something else like he did with the FAA bill. But, you know, the president's been trying to continue to push his health care plan to people who hate it. And that was no different on Monday. He went to the Chamber of Commerce. And it was interesting that news reports pointed out in a 35-minute speech, he got two lines of applause. So that's not the ratio he's used to, certainly. So he spent some time defending his plan to eliminate some regulations, but also defending all the regulations he wants to impose on businesses. At the same time, he's defended his health care plan, which went over like a lead balloon. And then, of course, the president went back to one of his old tried and true issues. You people make too much money. You have to hire more people and give them your money.
If we're fighting to reform the tax code and increase exports to help you compete, the benefits can't just translate into greater profits and bonuses for those at the top. They have to be shared by American workers, who need to know that expanding trade and opening markets will lift their standards of living as well as your bottom line.
You know, by listening to that, Jim, you'd think that the president has made just absolutely nirvana-like business conditions for these people to go out and create these jobs. Apparently, he's overlooking a few things.
Yeah, I suppose we should give a golf clap to Obama for going across the street and actually talking to the Chamber of Commerce and not just relentlessly demonizing them at Democratic fundraisers, which is how he spent his first 2 years. But by and large, you listen to that speech and you get the feeling he doesn't really grasp why business has a problem with him. And what's more, I mean, should businessmen be patriotic? Sure, everybody should be patriotic. But it's very tough to argue that a company should take courses of action that are not profitable or not good for the long-term health of the company in order to, because the president likes it or because it feels good or, you know, in the end, businesses have to make money. That's what they're in business for. So, I'd feel better if Obama could acknowledge that, hey, maybe Obamacare made you guys very nervous about how much the healthcare costs will be associated with hiring new employees. Or maybe he said, hey, maybe all this, you know, the fact that we only sorted out the tax rates for 2011 in December of 2010,
right.
Maybe that was a problem for you guys. Maybe you guys are worried about cap and trade because you suddenly have no idea how much you're going to pay for energy costs in the future. If he had acknowledged any of that stuff, maybe there would have been a better breaking of the ice. Well, I guess that comes from global warming anyway. a thawing of relations between these two sides. But I think in the end, he had no problem going over there and telling them how to do their jobs and how they should be operating their businesses. And, you know, that doesn't carry much credibility coming from a man who spent as little time in the private sector as possible and has, you know, really constantly been saying things like, oh, my stimulus is going to get Caterpillar hiring again. And the head of Caterpillar says, no, not really. I didn't really say that. You know, there's been tensions between the president and these groups for a while. And I think it's going to be a long while before anything resembling real trust is reestablished.
Well, that certainly seems to be the case, given the reception he got on Monday. But as all these difficult debates over health care and jobs are going on, there's always comic relief found in Illinois politics, usually in a shaking of the head variety of laughter, but laughter nonetheless. And of course, the big kerfuffle over the last few weeks in the Chicago mayor's race has been whether Rahm Emanuel can be on the ballot. Initially ruled yes, then appeals court says no, then Supreme Court says yes. So he seems to be cruising to election, and even this latest stumbling block probably won't make any difference whatsoever, but we're going to have fun with it anyway, because anytime this person rears his head into any debate, it's worth a good chuckle.
I am absolutely certain that I will be vindicated.
That, of course, is Rod Blagojevich, somehow acquitted, or at least a hung jury on all but one count in his previous trial. I'm sure they're going to align him up again, but Rod Blagojevich is claiming now that somehow a phone call between him and Rahm Emanuel, one phone call that will exonerate him of everything he's accused of, has mysteriously disappeared from evidence. Jim, how much will this dramatically change the Chicago mayor's race?
Well, it's hard to think of a witness more credible than Rod Blagojevich. You know, clearly this is, you know, I suppose it's one of those circumstances in which when Rod Blagojevich is making ethics accusations against you, then you know you're in a tough spot. Look, this is a, you know, I believe not only have they printed up the ballots showing Rahm Emanuel has won, I believe they've already printed up the newspapers declaring that he's won to be distributed the next day. So the mayor's race is a fait accompli. This adds a little bit of humor and enjoyment to watch a ghost from the past. I think one of the things that's kind of striking about this, though, is that I kind of figured that of all the long history of colorful political corruption in Chicago. In fact, I believe that Fox has this new cop show that's all about political corruption. And I don't know if Blagojevich or Rahm or Tony Rezko or any of these characters are cropping up on that show, but clearly this has become almost a pop culture phenomenon of big, dirty Chicago. That I figured there'd be this kind of backlash, and it seems like there was a backlash outside the city of Chicago, but it really hasn't created the boiling point, even post-Blagojevich and even post this thing is bleeping gold, et cetera, et cetera. So this is, you know, if you're Chicagoan, you have my sympathies. Like, you know, hopefully Rahm Emanuel will not run the city into the ground. You know, Blagojevich is still around and not cropping up on Donald Trump shows anymore.
Yeah, the only thing I can say is, New Orleans, pick up your game, because you've had some relatively competent leadership, at least in the governor's office lately, and now you have a slightly competent mayor. So if you're going to regain your glory days of Edwin Edwards and some of these people to top Chicago, you're going to have to really step it up here, because they are pulling out their A game right now with all these characters. So, Jim, fascinating as always. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Karumbas of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for the 3 Martini Lunch.